When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Wow. Everybody, stay calm. Stay calm. And welcome to the first ever live edition of Friends from Work, live on YouTube, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. I just want to say to everyone tuning in live, how fun is this? Thank you for listening. And for those who are just catching this like a normal episode, thank you. If you're new to this podcast, we are trying to add joy to your MCU viewing experience. And if we can do that, mission accomplished. Please rate, review our podcast, follow it, subscribe, and subscribe to this YouTube channel. Wherever you get your podcasts, it really helps us. And I want to say today's live edition of Friends from Work is brought to you by our friends at Organic Price Books, our official comics book provider. Robbie's going to show you one right now. Oh, what is this one?
Look at that. Look at that.
Oh.
This is the Dusk Jacketless Nice House on the Lake.
Halloween special coming up.
The more informative camera view. Yes, the special comic book club reading that Candace, I think, for the first time that I can remember, is way ahead of me and having completed her reading and is waiting on me to record the episode. And that's coming up soon. I'm really excited about it.
This is
going to be the first of a lot of kind of indie books that we're trying out that Candace is very excited about. So if that entices you, I think this is still available on Organic Price Books. I also think that our comic book club folks got this book a little bit early.
Oh, you worked something out?
I got word that this was supposed to ship a week later, but that it was shipped out as soon as it made it to Organic Price Books to accommodate our comic book club.
Look at us.
So, you know,
pulling strings.
We make things happen for our people. That's all I'm saying.
But check out those books and others at organicpricebooks.com, use our promo code Friends from Work. That way they know we sent you and you save some money. So, all right.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. This has been an incredible week because Spider-Man has been so much fun for you and I. Loki has been so much fun to follow. We're really close to hearing about the Marvels, and that's coming up really quickly. Less than a couple of weeks, I think, at this point, which is crazy, or a couple weeks from tomorrow. And then I can say this now, we have confirmed interviews with Natalie Holt to talk to her about a little music composition here in Loki, and John Pazino to talk about his work on Spider-Man 2. Obviously, we have to ask him a couple Daredevil things, but just some really fun things if you're into music coming up. So, okay, lots going on. anytime that these episodes end this way, you know how I like to do this. We're doing the episode kind of in reverse, and we're going to start way big picture, and then we'll work our way zooming in. I need to say this right off the bat. My favorite thing about this ending, and for those of you who didn't see it yet, stop here. But if you have seen it, the cut to black, and the black cut lasted like 8-9 seconds before the credits. Then the eeriest music rolls in the credits, which I thought was so genius. Mm-hmm. It very much was a Moon Knight episode 4 type
it
thing.
It was. I thought that. As soon as I saw those directors come across, I was like, yeah, that checks out.
Which is why
I'm so
stoked.
It felt like
the
end of Moon Knight episode 4. Yeah,
it did. I know. And here's the thing. This is what I love so much about the ending of this episode. So much of the marketing, so much of my brain power has gone towards the first 4 episodes storyline. And now that's over already. In the shocking twist of Disney Plus history, like, I have no idea now where we're going, because I thought the show was about stopping the loom. So the fact that it blew up, actually, I mean, this felt very Moon Knight 4. This felt very like Infinity War, not to the same degree, but like, that's the end of the episode. And now it feels so fresh, like all the directions we could go. We could sit here and theorize for 30 minutes on what could possibly happen. Is this the kickoff of the multiversal war now? Is there no TVA now, period, to stop any of the branches? Is this how Kang ultimately shows up? I have so much to get into with the nitty gritty. I just love that now we're basically starting fresh. This could be the thing that officially kicks off the multiversal war we always have thought about. This could be it now.
Yeah. I mean, which then, you know, I guess opens up all the same questions about Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. And if we saw Kang there because something that happens in Loki season 1, or something that had yet to happen at the time we were watching it in Loki season 2, because I have the same question. I'm also wondering what happens to, I mean, the black screen is genius because we just have so little to go off of.
That's what I'm saying. There literally is nothing to even theorize. There's no hint. I could have sworn they were going to come back to something like Moon Knight episode 4 and finish it for a second, but we got nothing.
Well, or Loki episode 4 and give like a pretty telling post-credit scene, because I was thinking the end of Loki episode 4 was kind of similar in a lot of ways, in that if you remember, we were really building up to the Timekeepers, and then episode 4 opens with this like ominous view of them.
Oh, I remember.
And then we find out that they're fake, and then Loki gets pruned or killed, you know, for all we know at the moment. And then at the end of the credits, we find out he's in the void. And then I think from there, you can kind of infer that a lot of things that we thought were off the table are not on the table. But we didn't get anything like that here, right?
There are no hints to go on for the future, no. I am pretty certain that this is what they were meaning when Kevin and Marvel was talking about how this season is going to be integral to the new multiversal plot. Something about this event now is triggering the future, I think, of the MCU here. I know that sounds crazy, but I think we're going there. And it's got me fascinated to think about what are the actual practical ramifications, not just on the multiverse, but actually of the characters we know in that TVA.
Right.
Like, is that Loki now dead? Seriously. Like, are we going to pick up with another branched Loki now?
No way. No.
How would they survive it? They all hit 10 pads real quick, and then they're out of the TVA, but now they're stuck in a branch. Maybe. Or where'd they go?
Or are they, like, in the void?
If you blow up in the TVA, you go to the void?
I mean, it wouldn't make sense, except I mean, Renslayer is certainly in the void, I feel like. And
that's because she was pruned, yeah.
Right. But I'm wondering,
if you get burned to death.
Well, I'm thinking of it more in terms of like character sets linking up. It just seems like it would make sense for all of our folks to be there, but maybe I'm still just stuck in like season one thinking that that's what happens after a big cliffhanger as everyone just goes to the void.
Well, we don't know now though. That's the thing.
Right. I mean, maybe you're right. I could see
maybe
something
that was
where,
the
like,
end of the entire TVA type storyline.
But I just don't, it didn't feel, it doesn't feel like the end of Loki and Sylvie and Mobius. Or OB. Like, I think that there's more there. And I wonder if OB actually had some kind of like backdoor way and was able to like if we find out that he was able to save just like kind of our core cast that was there, like basically like B-15 and all the people I just named and Casey, maybe.
What if they got, like I said, what if they got out last second, but then that was the last time the temp pads ever worked. So they're out on like a timeline, but now they're there or something.
That
oh gosh. I mean, anyone in the comments chat, like I am open to any theories here. Your guess is probably as good as anyone's here. And this is why I think people who had the 4-episode screeners were like, oh my gosh, like this is where they stopped us again,
right.
Which this makes so much sense. Just like when we got the 4 episodes for Moon Knight, it's like they want to get you to a key point of like, okay, you think the show's about this, but you have to get here. So, you know, there's more going on.
I'm wondering, like, you know, we've seen those shots in trailers of Loki at like the jet ski dealership with like the Nope inflatable men.
Yeah.
So like that's coming up. And so part of me wonders if like, if you're right and they do get spit out on a timeline, are they going to wind up spit out like in Mobius's place on a timeline or
different places, all of them or.
Yeah. But then I'm wondering, and let me know if I read into this.
What would Loki's mission be then? Would it legit be to try to find other Avengers or Thor? Right? Like if the TVA is destroyed, but they're spit on a timeline, would that be where he would, you know, he'd have to try to warn somebody?
See, what's interesting though is what would he even really be warning them about?
That all like, these versions of Kang are eventually going to meet up.
Yeah, but like, what do you do? Like, because I feel he's had this kind of clear goal where it's like, I'm going to stop everything from coming apart. But if everything's already apart, then he's just kind of, he's afraid of like hypothetical things that are not even really supposed to happen in real time. Well, I mean, I guess for like 1,000 years, depending on how much this like traces kind of the original Kang model that we got sort of laid out in season one with He Who Remains.
Connor brings up a good point. Is this He Who Remains' plan the entire time? Like, is this how he foresaw it going? Again, that kind of comes back to if it is, then that is what, this is the event that is leading to the multiversal war. Again, we just still haven't seen a good picture of what a multiversal war even looks like. We've seen the TVA kind of outside these timelines.
Right.
But how do they eventually start colliding? As you brought up before, we've seen a tiny bit of that in Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
All right. While you're processing, couple of smaller things here. I found this episode really interesting because I thought for like the first, and this is the genius of it, I thought for the first half or so, I didn't find myself as glued as I had been to the others. And I think it's because I was kind of just feeling like, oh, the show is just about like getting him back to fix the timeline. And then when Victor, the time loop, when Victor shows up and there wasn't like a sinister plan, like the hot cocoa machine was actually just a genuine fascination, I believe. I was kind of like, oh, okay, so maybe that's what the whole show's about. This has been fun, but... And then from about that point on, about halfway through, I started getting so tense with what was happening. And then obviously the ending blowing my mind because it's not about that. So I kind of started here, I guess. And then it just ramped up.
No, I think that's fair. I was maybe in a similar spot. I was pretty happy the entire way through. I kept wondering, like it mirrored the plot of the first episode so much.
Yes.
that I kept thinking like this. I mean, down to the point where like that's when we get the answer about who pruned
yes, and who called
Loki, and like we kind of are in the exact same scenes again. So it knew that and was that was intentional. So I knew that something different was going to happen, but I did not like I had looked down to, I got an email and I looked down for like a split second and looked up and there were just like spaghetti bits. Like all over the screen.
Yeah, dude, I'm not kidding. I had the exact same experience, not an email, but I wrote down, I was taking a note and I wrote, oh, the variant's actually helping. And then I looked up and the spaghetti bits and yeah. I said, Annika, did he just evaporate? What the, did, what?
I know, what I had to rewind.
Yeah, same thing, exactly.
And it wasn't like, it wasn't even that helpful. I was like, oh yeah, no, he just spaghetti bits.
Which
Mr.
We were
Fantastic style.
We were warned about in that Easter egg, remember, on the floor? Maybe you didn't see this. There was it said like you could turn into spaghetti if by the way, sorry that you're having a cough attack.
No, I'm sorry that people are listening slash says normally you would edit this out, but this is
you're stuck now.
The beauty of live TV, baby.
We'll do it live. We'll do it live.
I do before we forget though, you talked about the hot cocoa machine. I can't figure out what the deal was with that because Mobius and Sylvie have this like really intense mm-hmm, conflict. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. then we see Sylvie and Loki right after that. We don't see Mobius after that. We don't see him until he's back in with Obi and Victor and has the hot cocoa. But I thought it was strange that we don't know like how like what happened between those two things, like because the last shot we had of his face, he was clearly affected by that. So it's weird that like right after that, he would just kind of go like instead of getting pie, get cocoa and just move on.
I know exactly what you're saying. I was curious too, like, is it just meant to show his innocence and his genuine curiosity? Was that the point of it?
But then, oh, you mean like with Victor?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and that's,
what,
yeah, that's the
what
thing.
What are you saying? The significance of that or the significance of it like falling and whatnot?
Well, I'm just saying the significance in both cases, like as to Mobius and to Victor, like I'm just trying to figure out why, like why one, we didn't get whatever that like bridging scene was between Mobius being told off by
that.
Sylvie. And
if they start having a crush on each other, that's their couple name.
There you go.
Mokius.
And then also with Victor though. Yeah. I don't know. Like that felt like too much of a thing. And then even once he goes to the cocoa machine, like him, like handing it to the guy and then the guy being like, oh wow. Yeah. Like that's really good. Like maybe it was just innocence.
No, I'm with you. Annika and I were like, did he poison it? Is
yeah,
he
it felt
like
such a moment.
Yeah. This is where the chat can help. What did we miss with the actual hot chocolate machine?
I mean, it was a fun moment because of how much like Majors gets into it.
Right. But well, let me say that was one of my major notes was the fact that he volunteered. That's one of the things that had me on the edge of my seat at the very end that Victor timely jumps in and does it. My mind mm-hmm. immediately started racing. I said, Annika, like this could be like he gets out there and gets like superpowers or something from the aura, or maybe he knows something with the machine that he built right. that he can sabotage it or he can ramp it up. And then right. he actually kind of genuinely, I think, out of just being a decent person, goes out there. And that was my note. That's the note I was writing before he turned into spaghetti, which is like, wow, this is kind of wild. Well, no spoilers here, but it's kind of like a video game we're playing. We're now like the guy that we're terrified of is actually helping.
Mm.
And that was the twist for a second.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, obviously, he turns into spaghetti, and that's the massive twist. But you know what I mean? I wonder if it was all just a setup to show that this guy actually was going to try to do the right thing, this one particular variant. I mean, to be fair, He Remains did say that some of his variants started off very cordial.
Right. There are two reasons why I feel like it would make sense for that to have been exactly what we saw, which is like he was just like a ultimately goodish guy that was trying to do the right thing and now is just gone forever. Like, one, it would make sense because, yeah, like we have, like, just almost from like outside of the story, we know we have endless amounts of Kang. It makes sense that like if you're gonna kill off some characters in some like prominent ways, like that's a way of kind of using a main character in terms of like main, like the star power, but not like it doesn't minimize it in the way that it would, like if you're killing like all these Lokis.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I see.
Or at least not in that moment. Like, I know we did a different version of that in episode 5 of Loki season 1. But I guess my point is, like, if you're going to have a villain whose basis is there are infinite versions of himself, it makes sense to kind of use that in a moment like this dramatically. And then I think the other side of that is it also makes sense that he would be the one to volunteer because it like is fitting story-wise. Like, it's not random, like when like Bran becomes king at the end of Game of Thrones, which is not a reference they'll understand. Like, it's not something where it's like, this is not satisfying at all. But it, like, it is satisfying, but it also leaves all of our main characters on the board to where like we don't, like, we get the impact of that moment without losing like even like OB or B-15. So that makes sense to me. I think the thing that I'm wrestling with is, are the little hints of the, like, the guile that we got from Victor, are those just supposed to show that he is in, like, he is the same person on some level as He Who Remains and as these other Kangs, and that, like, he's capable of tricking the people around him and kind of switching sides? And of he has the same issues with a partnership, like with Ravonna, that He Who Remains had. And like, is that all those moments we're supposed to show us? Is like, these are the kind of universal traits of this person, you know, in whichever form? Or were those moments that were supposed to be hinting at like future developments for Victor himself? In which case, like, it would be strange that he's now off the board and none of that amounted to anything. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but I don't know.
I think it's probably the first one because practically there's not that much you could do with Victor. Like, I don't think that this guy from the 19th century is going to wind up being like all that pivotal. Like, I think we got what we could out of him, probably like from a story perspective. So I think I'm just struggling to, like, every time something happens like this in a show or in a comic, I'm always like, what are the chances that like doesn't actually stick? And it takes me a while to like get out of that zone. But I think I'm like talking myself out of that zone into, like, I think he's probably just gone.
This is confusing enough that there are going to be some dumb questions and comments here. But I'm just thinking, like, if the entire thing we just saw was part of He Who Remains' original plan, why involve Victor at all? Like, if he knew Victor was not going to be able to stop the loom from exploding, why even have, like, why drop off the TVA guidebook? Am I missing something? Like, why drop that off? Why go through the whole process of bringing him into the TVA if it's part of his plan? Just to then have it blow up. I can see why blowing up is part of the plan. Because maybe, like I said, maybe that unleashes all the other Kangs or whatever. And he knows he'll eventually win out. Or or maybe somehow Eliath ties into this or something. But why involve Victor then in the first place? What am I missing there? Why would you hand him the guidebook?
And do you, whenever you say Kang or He Who Remains plan, do you mean a plan set in motion at, like, the end of the finale from season 1? Or do you mean like his original plan from, like, you know, however far back before he created the TVA?
I think a plan set in motion pre the season 1 finale, but not that long before, like not from eons ago, but
okay.
when he kind of got the sense that eventually Loki and Sylvie are going to show up, I better be prepared. I guess that's the theory, I guess. Yeah. I don't know that's the answer. Another question I had, and I don't have an answer to this, and maybe you do. If Sylvie at the end of last episode was so mad at Ravonna that she kicks him through that portal after the whole speech about how she's played over her murder in her head for, you know, millions of times.
Right.
And she's obsessed with it. Why does she think that kicking her to the end of time is the ultimate get out? And then only to have Ravonna show up here seconds later. What was the penalty in that? And what was Sylvie's plan?
I don't think that Sylvie knew that Ravonna had access to a tempad when she put her at the end of time.
She didn't know that her and Miss Minutes were in cahoots. I guess Miss Minutes was gone at that point.
Right. Like, I don't think that...
Okay, well, she failed pretty miserably.
Right. I think Sylvie thought she was basically, like, trapping her there. That was my sense at the time. However, she wasn't like, I mean, she wasn't super surprised to see her, but I guess that's maybe just like game recognizing game.
Tons more of this. We'll be right back after a quick word from these sponsors. Okay, a couple of really quick small things here I want to get into. I thought the music was fantastic again, especially that end credit thing. That's a track I have to ask Natalie about. I thought it was a genius call, the actual editing of the entire ending. As I mentioned, to cut to black and have it stay black for so long, it almost felt like She-Hulk, where I'm like, did something go wrong on my actual television? And then it brought up the credits, and so there's an initial shock of like, no, how is the episode over? How could there not be a follow-up? And then the entire song that plays through that is so eerie and ominous. And I loved it. And it's actually mixed really quietly. Like, it's almost hard to hear.
I noticed that.
Feels very somber, as if the TVA is gone. And so shout out Natalie. She's doing some great work here. A couple of little things. I really enjoyed the interaction between Obi and Victor when they first met. I thought that was kind of fun, like that they both wrote the book together, the asking for the signature. Again, all kind of hints to where it felt kind of genuine, actually.
And that kind of answers your question, right? From last episode about, like, was he writing, like, were those diagrams in the book or notes that he had made? Like, is that what we're supposed to gather? That, like...
I don't know that.
Because maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I'm wondering if... I guess there are two ways to read that interaction. One could be that OB was just somehow aware of the experiments and the studies of this 19th century scientist and based a lot of his stuff off of that. And the other would be that the sketches that Victor made inspired by the handbook were then given to OB to inspire the handbook, which then inspired the sketches that Victor made.
All that stuff gets so wild, right? Even Loki pruning himself, which we predicted, I think, after that episode.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
If you start thinking about that for a second, it becomes that same loop, right? Like, Loki has to prune. Yeah. Like, in that moment that we witnessed, what if future-ish Loki does not prune past Loki? Does he have a choice to not prune him there? Would there then be two Lokis? Is it free will? Or like he saw the future and then you have to do it, or can you avoid it? Could he have not done it? That's the kind of stuff where it's like your mind starts going like crazy. But we got answers to that. Right. We got answers that Ravonna's secret.
Especially in the TVA, because we know that, like I feel like normally...
it's not supposed to exist there, the time-skipping stuff anyways.
Right. And like the... But I guess that, man, I mean...
Shout out, Pete. It is legit confusing for sure.
I thought it was interesting that they showed in the previously on the explanation of him time skipping.
Slipping.
I was like, okay, well, I guess we're maybe going to get some answers to some of the kind of episode one-ish questions that were not addressed that I know like Greg has been kind of consistently putting out there in his weekly write-ups. And so, which shout out, if you're not reading those, they're free on the Friends from Work Substack. You should read them. I actually legit, I think I benefit a lot from help. Like it, when I get those from Greg and we get them ready for posting, it is a kind of great little refresher and aid for reflection for yours truly. So, true. But I do think that like, it was interesting that we got that. I wonder if that's it. Like, cause I know one question has been like, is there more time slipping to come?
Yes.
I kind of think, do you think that there is?
People in our chat do. Otherwise, those shots are just red herrings that were not used. That's the alternative, right? Because we've seen some more skipping in the.
That's true.
In the trailer.
That's true. But I,
does this trigger time skipping? What we just saw happen.
What triggered time slipping in the first place? Like, did we ever get a, like,
No, we never did, because Loki got kicked through the time door, the portal, and he shows up in the TVA. He's panicking about He Remains, and that's not the right one. And the next time we see him, he's slipping, which is not supposed to be possible. So there's not even an answer to that. So if we had an answer to that, maybe we could use that to predict what would happen now. But we don't.
Yeah.
I will say on a small note, I do like that by giving us some of the little answers, I think it allows the writers to put the focus on the big things. Instead of constantly leaving little things out there, then they know the fan community is going to run with those. Like, why did we never get an answer on the phone call? And so I like that even though the answer on the phone call wasn't like a super deep thing, it was just OB calling to be like, where are you at? Are you hurrying? Are you coming? Right. I like that. Just get it out of the way. So it is a box, a small box, but we can check it and be like, okay, that's not a lingering thing. And so I did like seeing that Loki pruned himself. I like seeing that Miss Minutes' secret was that her mind was wiped, which wasn't that shocking, but get it out of the way. I like seeing that the phone call was OB, et cetera. Because then I think it does leave us to actually theorize on the bigger stuff. By the way,
I think that's right.
Another little side note. I absolutely love, I don't know if this is controversial, I love the creepier version of Miss Minutes, and I love the creepier that she gets. This was wild, man. So I liked the last episode stuff. Like, I liked Thirsty Miss Minutes. And then that got weird for me, and I loved it. And then this was also wild, too. Like, how about that line? I wrote it down right before she gets powered off. You'll never be him. After she's like, oh, I'm losing it. You'll never be him. She says it like that. The visual of her shutting off was dope. Dude, I like Creepy Miss Minutes. By the way, there was a shot of Ravonna killing all those people by shoving them in the box.
Yeah.
And Miss Minutes is like,
laughing at it.
She's like, yeah, like do it. And I'm like, dude, you're a psycho. Miss Minutes is a thirsty psycho.
I think, so here's a question with Miss Minutes.
And I love it.
I think I would not. this might be more controversial than what you're saying. Because I'm with you. I think that I would be okay if that's the last of Miss Minutes that we get.
Oh, hold on.
I love it, but I feel like it's a character that worked so well. Like, I thought Miss Minutes worked especially well in season one when, like, there was, like, this general kind of, like, underlying, like, even before the jump scare, like, a little bit of, like, eeriness, like, that we got, I think, from the way that she was, like, hiding stuff from Sylvie and, like, just knowing that she was kind of in on what Ravonna was doing. And then I feel like we've been able to build on that really effectively in season two. And I'm with you in that I think like that all kind of naturally culminated here with it just going straight, like it's not even sinister, it's just like straight evil. I'm just not sure there's anywhere else for that character to go that's going to interest me.
Let me think
and
about
I've
that.
Said that before and I've been like proven wrong. So I'm not, this is not me foreclosing the possibility. I just don't know that, like I don't want like a, I don't want like a Darth Vader mode Miss Minutes at the end of this thing.
I think I slightly disagree there.
So many of our listeners would be like, that's exactly what I want out of Miss Minutes. And I'm sure that like Warren's already working on the Photoshop.
I think I disagree. Shout out Warren. I think I disagree in that I could see her being a part of whoever He Who Remains is at this point's larger plan. If she was the AI that he built, why couldn't it turn into like a really smart AI thing that she's partially behind this too? I guess that would interest you. I think it'd be interesting to me.
No. That would interest me, but I would think at that point we're kind of beyond Miss Minutes. Like, are you saying that it would be like it would evolve into a separate kind of a thing, like sort of Jarvis Division? Or are you saying that it would just continue to be Miss Minutes, like kind of as the right hand person entity to Kang or He Who Remains or like whatever the kind of preeminent variant will be?
Can I spoil Mission Impossible? Let me just say that.
Yeah.
Could it be like that?
I mean, that would be a different thing to me. Like, and at that point, I would say, like, if we're kind of, when I'm saying Miss Minutes, I mean, like, the like, cartoon, quasi-holographic, Tara Strong-voiced character. I just think that, like, the ending that we just got for her was kind of perfect. Like, we saw her getting, like, kind of increasingly unhinged. We saw her go so far as to, like, not only rebel against a variant of He Who Remains, but even kind of He Who Remains himself, because I think you could argue that if not for Miss Minutes going rogue, then the plan might have worked that He Who Remains had set in place and the radiation, you know, wouldn't have increased such to the point that Victor got spaghettied. So I think that like that seems like she's kind of gone all in and, you know, talking about the Mission Impossible, like done the rogue AI thing. And now I think to have that kind of final ominous thing before everything, then just
the you'll never be him, that line.
Yeah. And then everything vanishes. Like I just kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. You know, by the way. Yeah.
It's that part of me that always like, and this is again, maybe like the Marvel Comics reader in me where it's like, every now and then you get these moments or these characters that are so effective and so impactful.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then Marvel realizes like, oh man, like, you know, that character that we had that great story with, like, that's so great. We should keep them around forever. And then it's like, oh man, but this thing that was so impactful is suddenly
you don't want it to
impact.
Become Agatha a little bit, right? Like so perfect in the role, but now a little bit hesitant to see like, because that works so well.
Right.
We need to make another one.
Yeah. Like it's.
Yeah. No, I don't think I want Miss Minutes to like get a body and become Vision of sorts, you know, voiced by somebody else. I don't think I'd want that. But I do think that she has to be a little bit more involved in the overarching plan of He Who Remains. And I think we'll find a little bit more out, at least about that, if we don't see her in the final two episodes. And honestly,
well, do you think, or go ahead. Kind of as a larger question to go back to, I guess, what Connor was asking in the chat, but I mean, do you think that He Who Remains plan is still in motion, or do you think it's been thwarted by Renslayer and or Miss Minutes?
Okay. And while you're thinking about that, just a couple of tiny notes, last things. I still love Mobius. I think that his writing and his delivery is so perfect. It's just the right amount of humor, little lines really quickly that don't take away from the scene, but add a fun adventure side to it. I Right. I think it would be really fun to have a version of Mobius hang around. Like, that's a character I think would be fun to explore. I'd like to see what he's like in the Sacred Timeline. I'd like to see if now with this knowledge, can he help in some other way? Like, I think it'd be like, he's so good that I would love to see him interact with other characters. That's a, you know, that's one of the fun things about the Marvel Cinematic Universe is like, and I'm getting to that point now with a lot of these people. Like, I didn't think I'd ever say what I'm about to say, ever. But like, a Thor Loki reunion would be so fun now. When this series was first announced, I was like, gosh, Loki already had such a perfect death and like, don't erase it. But now I'm kind of like, after all this growth, it'd be kind of fun to see like what Thor thinks of it, or, you know, like Mobius, could he meet Doctor Strange? You know, I just want to, I don't know. I want to, I kind of want to see that stuff, but that's that, just the, that's the cheap fan in me for sure.
I'm glad you said that though, because that was one of my favorite moments of this episode, was the whenever Loki was explaining the events of the first Thor movie to Sylvie.
Love those Easter eggs.
Which is not something that we've ever heard articulated in that way. I mean, it's like the same kind of moment that we got when he was explaining of the Avengers events to Mobius, who obviously knew them, but just talking through them. And it's like, I don't know, it's it's probably low-hanging fruit or gimmies, but I like, it's not just the self-referentialness of it, or self-reference, I guess. It's the fact that it's showing Loki processing that in an interesting way. Like, and it shows us kind of both, it gives us more insight into what Loki was thinking at the time, but it also gives us insight into kind of how he's grown since the start of this series and since, you know, the scene in Endgame that kind of kicked it all off. So I really, that was a fun moment for me that kind of left me in a similar headspace.
Genuinely, last question from me, and this is a open-hearted question. I have not made my mind up about this, okay? I want to hear from you, how did the scene between Loki and Sylvie, where they talked about hope and how you need to hope that this could happen and hope that this could happen, blah, blah, blah. How did that hit you? Did you buy it as delivered from Loki, or was it a touch too sincere for this version of Loki? I guess I'm asking because maybe there was a part of me that thought, I know I love that he's come so far in his character growth, but was that like too just genuinely good guy when just a couple of episodes ago we were talking about the villainry of Loki and how that was kind of fun to relive? Do you understand what I'm asking? Was that too like good guy-ish, or was it perfect? That's the growth.
No, I hear you. That didn't strike me. I have been struck that way before by like scenes in the show. I think that part of the reason why that one didn't is I think that Hiddleston and Eric Martin, I guess to some degree, are kind of threading this line well. Loki is sincere, but not necessarily like, I don't think that changes the fact that he's still got like a dark side, or like some of the violent urges, or some of the, like the fact that he is still the same person and can like go there, because we've seen that, like even like not just with the torture stuff, which I think you could argue is all put on to some degree, but I think the, like the moments when he's after Brad, or the moments when he's like in Chicago, like even though he's not going against Victor, like you see a willingness for him to kind of do what he needs to do whenever he thinks that like the ends justify the means, which has kind of always been Loki on some level, right? Like that was always at least what he said he was about. And then I think we find out in the premiere from season one that there are, you know, a lot of neuroses built in there, obviously, and like posturing, but it's kind of going back to this idea of like the greater good, which if anything, like you could argue, you know, if he is the good guy, puts him more in like the like Tony Stark camp, I guess, than the Steve Rogers. But I feel like it's this idea, like whenever he's talking to Sylvie and saying, yes, like all these branches were lost, but others were saved. And like, that's great. Like he's not really like, he's not crying about all the ones that were lost, which I think is what would have been a little like a bridge too far for me for Loki. Like he's not like breaking down at like everything that they've allowed to happen. He's more like the fact that we are able to do this is such a win.
Well, you maybe just said this too, but I also like that they did include that last line, because the last line from him feels like old Loki for a split second when she said, well, it feels like you're playing God. And then he says, we are gods.
Yeah.
So that I like to include that line. Cause like, okay, there he is a little bit. Like he still wants some of that power.
That's the interesting thing about this show to me. And I don't know, whenever we interviewed Waldron in season one and he talked about how he was always drawn to the Loki character, I've always been like a tad, not in that interview, but that sentiment, like the idea that he's such a complex character, I've always eye rolled a little bit at prior to this show, just because I was like, I really love Hiddleston's performance and I think that he's done a really good job with it. But I think, like, you know, in the same way that we talk about Mobius always being able to predict that he's just going to betray everybody, it's like, is that really that complicated and nuanced of a character? But I think what I'm seeing that's really interesting here, and maybe this is me reading in like metatextually, but to go back to like the big glorious purpose speech that has inspired so much of this, like season one ended with Loki kind of choosing to not be in power, like, and to not take over from He Who Remains, or to not kill He Who Remains. I guess he kind of doesn't choose not to be in power, because if he had his way, like, He Who Remains wouldn't have died and he and Sylvie would have gone back to the TVA and let it, which I guess is my point. Like, I think in some ways, like, yes, Loki is, he's showing that he has like more of a moral compass than I think we saw in projects like The Avengers or the bulk of the Thor movie. But at the same time, if you look at what his goal was, like in that big speech in Stuttgart where he's saying like freedom is the great lie and basically like you need someone like me to carry that burden for you. And then here he is telling Sylvie, you can't free people and then not protect them. And like he's arguing for inhabiting the exact role that he was arguing he should inhabit in his like kind of grandest villain moment in the Infinity Saga. So I just think it's a really interesting
This is why I love you. Because you can find those through lines. It's just, you're doing the Lord's work. Thank you. Yeah, or make them up. And we headcanon some things over here at Friends from Work. That's for sure. Do you have anything else?
See our Thor Love and Thunder episode.
No. That's not headcanon. That's truth right there. That's what that is. That's all I had, unless you have something else.
No, I think that's it. I'm just genuinely curious to see. Like, there are a lot of things that...
Yes.
Like, I'm really excited to see where they go. I feel like there's a lot of forward momentum, but also, like, not... I just don't... Like, I'm so excited to see the very beginning of next episode in a way that I feel like I haven't been in this series since probably the end of episode 5 of season 1.
Well, like I started it off the entire episode. I have no idea now, and I love that. I love that the show wasn't just about stopping the loom from overheating.
I feel like I've had a lot of things pop in my mind that I've since forgotten, because this is just one of those episodes that's super like mind-bendy. But is your read of like the actual last second, like it kind of I know we're looking at the loom, and then it's sort of widening, and it looks like it's like... it's kind of expanding and then it just goes to black from there. Like, is it burning out?
The last shot was Loki and Mobius staring at an extra bright thing kind of coming at them.
I think then it went to black. So the reason I ask is because it looked a little bit to me the way it looks when people get pruned. Like that shot of Loki, whenever it's like just the way it like glows and then kind of comes in, like
all getting pruned and they all go to the void or something.
But then that would be too much of a rehash. I'm wondering if there is at least like if that is the same like mechanism to some degree, even if it functions differently, because we're now living in a post He Who Remains reality. But I didn't know if anybody else felt like there was an intentional similarity there, or if it's just like bright light.
Maybe. Again, I think that's a perfect place to end it. That is single-handedly the most interesting thing concerning the MCU right now, is what's going to happen in episode 5, just because we need some answers on what happens when there isn't a TVA, or if the TVA does blow up, do they go back to branched timelines? Do they go back to the sacred timeline? Are they aware of what happened in the TVA?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for multiversal incursions? All this and more right back here.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for sharing. As always, get your comments in at the FFW podcast on all social media outlets, the FFWpodcast.com, YouTube channel, et cetera, everywhere else. We are so appreciative of this community, and gosh, I can't wait to see where this goes. We need to talk more Spider-Man 2 at some point. We need to talk Loki episode 5 at some point. We need to talk about the Marvels at some point. Hopefully soon here. Thank you for listening. We'll see you guys next time right back here on Friends From Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantande products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.